Welcome to the Coaching and Therapy channel. So this channel is quite close to my heart because I train coaches in embodiment. I mean, why? Because if you don't work with the body, you're missing a lot. Whether you're a coach, a therapist, facilitator, whatever, that's how you go deep quickly. That's how you do stuff that's sticky. We have to take the body into account. This channel is sponsored by Dylan Newcombe and Uzazu Embodied Intelligence. Dylan is a genius, quite simply put, and I wouldn't say that about many people in this field. I've been studying with Dylan for, God, the first time was probably 10 years ago in the Netherlands. Speaks fluent Dutch, by the way, as well as Korean and a few other languages. What I love about Dylan is his ability to make models of things, looking at how embodiment works. His system, Uzazu, U-Z-A-Z-U, is really all about state shifting. So I think of him as the sort of master of state changing, how we can shift our state, our client's state, and how we can develop ourselves through those different ways of being. So I think for coaches and therapists, it's like easy to learn, practical toolkit. I've used it myself over the years. So if you want a 3-day online training with Dylan, then look at the link below, or you can go to Uzazu, uzazu.org. And even easier, he's got an embodied assessment there you can do as well. We all love doing these little tests about ourselves, but this is an embodied one. So there you go. Welcome to the Coaching and Therapy channel. I'm going to be on this one a lot just because there's lots of cool people on here. Lots of people, I think, you know, well worth a listen. Embodiment in facilitation is so necessary. So from me to you, welcome.
So I could talk about Curtis, I think, for 15 minutes straight. Maybe we should try it one day. We are very fond of him here at the Embodiment Conference, but I'm just going to give you a short introduction. So Curtis is an executive coach, team facilitator, trained stage actor of all things, and co-author of the book, The Field Guide to Emotions. His professional work spans more than 30 years. He worked with Fortune 500 companies, government agencies, students, and parents seeking greater self-connection and self-understanding. In his coaching, Curtis incorporates the physical, emotional, energetic, as well as the mental bodies of his clients, so they are able to produce profound changes in a shorter period of time. On a personal note, not so long ago, I had the opportunity to watch Curtis coach live in front of a group. It was somatic coaching. And it was a very humbling and touching experience. And let's just say that there were tears involved. So Curtis, a very, very warm welcome. And the screen is all yours from now on. Please take it away.
Thank you very much, Marianne. I remember that coaching session very fondly. Thank you for presencing that. So welcome, everyone. I am pleased that you are here and we can spend a short time together. I'd like to start just by, you know, I want to just get up and stretch a little bit, and maybe you guys have been sitting in front of your screens for a while, so I just invite you to stand up, stretch or not. It's just an invitation. And then sit back down. Just because this is embodiment, right? We got to move our bodies and not just be heads in front of screens. And the way I like to start a lot of my coaching sessions is with 3 long, slow, deep breaths. And I'd invite us all, and these are all invitations. If this is something you don't feel like doing, don't do it. But I just allow your eyes to close and take 3 long, deep breaths. And then we'll continue. Great. Thank you. And some of you may still be doing your breathing. That's fine, pardon the interruption. One of the main reasons why I do that is it helps me to transition from whatever I was doing before a coaching session or before this session and into being present in this moment. Another benefit is it only takes 3 long, slow, deep breaths to engage the parasympathetic nervous system. And the parasympathetic nervous system is the nervous system that slows things down. So you can just relax. It's the called that quote unquote the rest and digest system. And the sympathetic nervous system is the action system. They're both really useful, but in different circumstances. So thank you for that. And now I'm going to share my screen because I've got a slideshow for you. And hopefully this will work. And so emotions and somatic coaching. And as she said, I've been coaching for a really long time. I'm a co-author of The Field Guide to Emotions, and which is a practical orientation to 150 essential emotions, along with my co-author, Dan Newby. And one of the main reasons why we wrote this book was to support emotional literacy. And in our work globally, we found that people were emotionally illiterate. Just like 150, 200 years ago, most of the planet was unable to read and write. We think that a great deal of the planet now is unable to actually access, name, identify, and engage with their emotions. And that leads to a lot of suffering in our assessment. I know it has in my life. And our claim is that our emotional life is central to who we are as human becomings. And I use becomings as separate from human beings because we are constantly becoming. And I want to support us in not thinking of ourselves as static or fixed. And because in coaching, if we think of ourselves as, well, that's just the way I am, then there's no opening to actually change and shift. And so we wrote this book because if you were going into a strange forest or a territory that you weren't familiar with, and you wanted to know what the flowers and plants and animals were that you might come across, you would want a field guide. Right? So we decided in the emotional domain, if you're going through that territory, you might want a field guide to help you. And so not only does it give you a definition of what the emotion is, but it also how your body might shape itself when you find yourself in that emotion, what the purpose of the emotion is, what the impulse you might be driven towards acting on if you're in that emotion, but we'll get into that in a little bit later. But that's why we wrote it. We wanted to help people become emotionally literate and ease some suffering that we see out there. And I don't know about you, but this past year has been a roller coaster, and I see in myself and in others a great deal of fear. And while fear is a useful emotion, the constant state of fear is not. And so if we can alleviate ourselves from being in that constant state of fear, we'll have greater ability to coordinate action with others that is appropriate and meaningful. So what is an emotion? And this is when we first started out, we couldn't find like a universal definition. So we went back to the Latin, emovere. And for those of you that actually studied Latin, which not me, that might be a terrible pronunciation, but that's what I got to go with. It means that which moves us. The one I like the best is emotion, the energy that moves us, or our fuel for action. Because when you think about it, everything that you do is included in the emotional domain. And we offer a practical interpretation of emotions. And this is just an interpretation, okay? It's not the truth. And if it doesn't, if anything I say is not, doesn't meet with how you experience your emotional world, please, your experience is really what matters here. Not, this is, we are sharing this as a help. And if it's, if it is a help, great. And if it's not a help, just throw it out. Hopefully that it will be. So you've probably already read ahead, but we are emotional beings. Okay. They are not discretionary. It's not like you can leave them at home when you go to work. So, and for the longest time I was heard, you know, in the workplace, well, women are so emotional. They shouldn't be in leadership positions. And it's just, what's the word I'm looking for? Absurd to think that. First of all, because we're all emotional becomings. And actually any decision that we've ever made has included emotions. That's our claim, okay? Number two, they're not inherently good or bad, positive or negative. They're either serving us or they're not in the moment. And they have a purpose. Each one of them has a unique purpose. So we may not like the way we're feeling, but if we can actually get in touch with them and realize why we are experiencing what we're experiencing, then we can begin to create some emotional agility and move away from an emotion that's not serving us in the moment. And as I said before, they're inseparable from reason. Thinking includes emotions. I'm sorry, Mr. Descartes, it's not just about thinking. Never was, never will be. And they are a domain of learning and knowledge and wisdom. And I want to shout out to Daniel Goleman. If you're not familiar with him, he wrote the book Emotional Intelligence and really opened up this domain to the business world and also the greater world out there and legitimized it through his work. Not his work alone, but that was a watershed, a book. And because I don't know about you, but when I was in school, I didn't learn anything about emotions. Nothing. And all the way through college. Now, I went through a lot of different emotions, but never learned anything about them. And it, seeing as though they are crucial to who we are, it's bizarre that there is zero education in our school systems around it. So another thing is they're contagious. And this is the fun part for me about emotions is that, Have you ever been in a really grumpy mood or a down mood and you walk into a party and your initial response is, oh, why are all these people so happy? And then if they're dancing and music, slowly, little by little, your mood of grumpiness kind of falls away and you're swept up in this contagious atmosphere of celebration. And it goes the other way as well. You can be in a great mood and you walk into a room where they've just been having this amazingly knockdown, drag out fight and your mood can just go whoosh, and you go, wow, what happened? And it's important for emotional intelligence and agility to know what's mine and what's not mine so that you can walk into an emotional field and go, oh, wait, okay, that's not mine. And I don't need to absorb it. But that takes practice and awareness. And you know, with enough practice, you can get to that point. Because before that, I would just, this emotion would overwhelm me and I would just want, what happened? I was feeling great. I didn't know. And finally, we are always in an emotion or multiple emotions. So our claim is that we're never not in an emotion. And that's just a claim, it's not the truth. And we find it to be useful given one of our claims of leadership is that a leader needs to be able to create the emotional context for the task at hand. How do you bring your people along to get the job done? So important to have the correct emotional context. Okay. So, what makes something an emotion? Again, there's really no universal agreement, but here's our offer that might help in exploring and attending to our emotions. Every emotion has a story, at least the ones that we've explored so far. It has an underlying narrative and it gives us information. And if you want to stay in whatever emotion you're in, just keep in that narrative and you will most likely stay in that story. You'll stay in that emotion, sorry. It also has an impulse. It's something we feel like doing. We may choose not to, but in a particular emotion, we're predisposed to act in a particular way. And all the emotions have a purpose. It takes care of some aspect of life. It exists for a reason. So let me give you an example. So let's say you're angry. Okay, this is one that I am very familiar with. And I grew up in a very angry home and adopted a lot of those behaviors. So it's been a long journey for me to become emotionally agile around anger. But also, I'm very familiar with it. So the underlying narrative for me around anger is, this is not right. This should not be happening. This is unfair, somewhere along those lines. And the impulse is to punish whoever the offender is. Now, the purpose of it, now many people think of anger as a bad emotion or a negative emotion, and you can hold it that way, but what I prefer to look at is, what's the purpose here? And the purpose of anger is to show me what I care about. Now, it's going about it in a not a very productive way. So, but once, if I'm in it, and I can recognize that, I go, so what is it that I'm caring about in this moment? It can actually give me the beginning of the shift to move to a different emotion that in the moment will serve me better. So that's just an example of the story, the impulse, and the purpose of every emotion. And what do emotions do? Pretty much everything. So many things in our lives, so they determine what we do. If we're passionate about it, if it gives us satisfaction, if it brings us joy, odds are we're gonna do it. And then how we do it. If I'm feeling complacent, I'm gonna do it completely different than if I'm feeling ambitious or in gratitude. And why we do whatever it is we do. I do it because I want to feel content, or this is something urgent that needs to be done. It even determines if we do something. So if I'm in excitement about something, that my tendency is going to be to do it much more so than if I'm afraid of doing it. And then who we do it with. It's like, if I trust somebody, the tendency for me to coordinate action with them is going to be much higher. If I don't trust them, or if they're loyal to me, or if I'm loyal to them, there's a bond or love. So that's pretty comprehensive in terms of what emotions do. And amazingly, again, that we don't teach this to our children. They also make relationships possible with ourselves. But the emotion of pride, the emotion of dignity, the emotion of guilt. With individuals, emotions of compassion, and anger, and love. Loyalty and trust and tolerance with groups. And with what is beyond human, awe, and wonder, and faith. And Have you ever stepped out on a rainy day and the sun was peeking through and all of a sudden you saw this rainbow go across the sky? I don't know about you, but for me, that just brings wonder to me. And it's a wonderful emotion. So in terms of coaching, how emotions are essential for coaching is that emotions are the link between our thoughts and our ideas and our actions or inactions. So they're crucial as a coach. And even if you're not a coach, so for those of you that aren't coaches that are on this call, this is a life skill. This is not just for coaches. And the first step is attending to your emotions. And by that, I mean bringing your attention to whatever you're experiencing in your body. Emotions always have a physical component. So it might be, if you're feeling love or compassion, there might be some warmth in this area. If you're feeling fear, your shoulders might come up like this. Okay, so bring your attention to what you're feeling in your body and see if you can identify what the emotion is. And then see if you can discover the story, the purpose, and the impulse. And then you can determine if you want to continue to be in that story or choose a new one that is more suitable to the moment. So I want to read a short poem here by, and I forgive me for pronouncing this incorrectly if I do, Naria Wahid. It's a very short poem, but from an emotional perspective, I really love it. There are feelings you haven't felt yet. Give them time. They are almost here. And for me, this poem speaks to the fact that we originally start out with maybe being able to name 5 or 6 emotions: happy, sad, glad, mad, surprised, disgust. And as we engage ourselves in the study and attending to our emotional state, other feelings begin to show up. And it's quite fascinating to discover our emotional lives more fully, at least for me, and I hope so for you. So, emotions and coaching. Isn't that a happy little guy on the left? So he's experiencing the emotion of resignation. And the story that goes with resignation is, nothing I do will make any difference. And so the great thing about somatics is that it can support you in discovering what's going on in your emotional world, and your emotional world can inform your somatic world. And by somatic, I mean the body in all its wholeness, fullness. So it means the physical body, the emotional body, the mental body, and the energetic body, and also the spiritual body. But sometimes I leave that out, especially in executive boardrooms. They're not usually very open to that in the beginning. But so do me a favor, if you're willing, and if you're not, that's fine too. So just slump over like this guy in your chair, and your head's hanging down, and your chest is a little caved in, your shoulders are slumped, and nothing I do will ever make any difference. And while you're down there now, put a smile on your face and feel happy or feel joy. All right, come on back up. I don't know about you, but I'm not able to engage with joy when my body is shaped this way. But now, if you shape your body this way, like the other guy on the other side, okay, and his story is, life's amazing, let's celebrate. I mean, have you ever noticed almost anyone in a sport that wins almost invariably goes like this? And it's global. It's, I don't care what country you're in, if you're watching a sporting event and they win, the celebration looks like this. Why is that? I don't know. But all I know is that it is. So if you're in like this and you put a smile on your face and you're feeling happy or joyful, now try and feel resigned. It's really hard. Okay. So your body, your physical body, is a great territory to explore, to support you in your emotional intelligence and agility. Just knowing that if you shift your body, the chances of you shifting the emotion are way greater, as well as shifting the story. If you shift your body and your story, almost guaranteed you'll shift the emotion. Whoopsie. So, this is a practice that you can do, is just notice which emotion you're feeling most strongly or has you caught. I love the glare when you're wearing glasses on a computer. And then ask yourself, so how is this emotion helpful? And how is it a barrier? So, because like we said before, they're not inherently positive or negative. It's an energy that's either serving us or not serving us in the current situation. So if I was walking down the street and I saw a gang of tough guys coming down with chains and guns and knives, I would be surprised if fear did not show up and warning me that there was danger and to run, right? So that would be useful in that situation. However, if there's something that I'm trying out for the first time and I'm afraid, that might be a barrier to me actually going and doing it. So if I identify the emotion that I'm caught in, say fear, and say, you know what, it's kind of a barrier, then I'm, okay, great. So step two is, what's the emotion that might be helpful in this current situation if I don't want to be in fear? So let's just take the top one on this one too. So what about gratitude? What if I were to practice the emotion of gratitude? What does that feel like in my body? And like, you don't need to know how to get there. Just identify where you want to end up, okay? And one of the ways that I like to work with emotions is remember a time when I felt grateful. And then notice what's going on in my body and go, oh, that's it. So let me practice that shape. What's the narrative of gratitude? Right? So the narrative of gratitude might be, I am so fortunate for all the gifts in my life. That might be the narrative. And so then I have a body shape, I have a narrative, and I can move into that and practice that until I can at will come into that body shape and that emotion. So this is where we intentionally shift to an emotion that we desire. Like I said, the new story that you will adopt and the change you will make somatically. And you practice this until the emotion you desire is habitual. What would it be like to habitually live in gratitude? Working on it, still not there, but more and more and more. And if you're into it, I would highly recommend a meditation practice to support you. It's kind of cross training. I found that meditation and emotional agility are really powerful partners, because in meditation, I can begin to see the emotion arise and peak and fall away and begin to see it for what it is and not get caught by it. So I highly recommend that if you're up for it, to begin to establish a meditation practice, get a meditation teacher, and that will support you in your emotional intelligence and agility as well, and literacy. So why this works is that because emotions can happen in two ways. Emotions can happen as a reaction, or it can happen as an intention. I intend to move to live in these emotions and then practice that. And how it works ontologically. So I was trained along with my co-author, Dan Newby, as an ontological coach. And ontological is a fancy word for the study of being and how we be in the world can be comprised of these three domains, as well as the spiritual domain. So the emotions, the body, and language. Okay, so in language, we have the narrative or the story of the emotion. Okay, the emotion itself, and then the body is the posture, the movements, and the sensations that are present when you are experiencing a certain emotion. So the three of them are what we call a coherence. And a coherence is when they're all working together and they match. And so just let me give you an example of incoherence. And so if I were to walk into a room and you said, "Hey, Curtis, how you doing?" And I went like this, I went, "I'm fine." It's like, that's incoherent, because the story that I'm saying, that I'm fine, does not match my body. Okay? And immediately you would go, okay, well, have a nice day. And that would probably be the end of our conversation. So make it a practice. And in any coaching engagement, when I'm working with someone that wants to create a new way of being for themselves, I always ask them to be in a practice that will actually support them in moving into that new way of being. Because without practice, we are homeostatic beings. We have a tendency to keep things the way they always were. So unless we are intentional and committed to a practice, it won't change. So what will you do? You're going to move from what emotion to what other emotion? And then we practice it. Okay, so now I'm in anger. Now I'm in gratitude. When will you do it? So, okay, every morning before breakfast, I am going to practice this 5 times. How will you do it? Okay, I'm going to shape myself with my body. I'm going to repeat the narrative, and then I'm going to shape myself in the other body and repeat the narrative. How often will you do it? I'll do it once a day, twice a day, 3 times a day. And this is also very important, at least for me, It's like, who will support you to do it? Like, maybe you could find a learning partner and you could support each other in discovering this for each other. And then practice, 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 practice. And finally, if you're interested in further study around this, I highly recommend my friend Dan Newby and his School of Emotions, and it's www.schoolofemotionsworld. There's also, as I mentioned so many times, our book, The Field Guide to Emotions. And Dan has also written a book called The Unopened Gift, which is a primer on this, our way of thinking and holding emotions, which you might find really useful. And my website is there also if you want to contact me. And I'd like to end with a quote from a woman named Martha Graham. For those of you that are not familiar with her, she was a very famous choreographer and dancer. And she wrote this note to another famous choreographer named Agnes DeMille. And she says, "There is a vitality, a life force, an energy, a quickening that is translated through you into action. And because there is only one of you in all of time, this expression is unique. And if you block it, it will never exist through any other medium and will be lost. The world will not have it. It is not your business to determine how good it is, nor how valuable, nor how it compares with other expressions. It is your business to keep it yours clearly and directly, to stay open and aware to the urges that motivate you. Keep the channel open." Words to live by, and I wanted to share that with you. And now we have time, I believe, for some, are there any questions in the Q&A?
Absolutely. I have my own questions. There is also a question from the audience. So Ariel is asking, how to overcome emotional numbness and freeze, and if you can suggest any practices.
So how to overcome emotional numbness?
And freeze.
And freeze.
And if you can recommend any practices.
Yeah, so freeze is is usually a trauma response, and numbness is as well. And so what I've found to be the most effective way of dealing with these sorts of things is somatic experiencing with Peter Levine. And I would highly recommend finding one of his practitioners to support you. And what they do is they will titrate. And by titrate, I mean they will just begin to work with your trauma in a very safe environment so that you don't re-traumatize yourself and go into freeze or numbing. And you can begin to create some freedom around that. But this is something that you really, in my opinion, you really need to work with somebody who's trained to work in trauma, because trying to do it on your own, I don't say it's impossible, but it's gonna be really hard.
Thank you. There is another question from Marion, our host for the evening. So my question is, why does it hurt sometimes in our own bodies when we are experiencing someone else's incoherence? you know, when you show the, so when we witness someone else being incoherent like that, why is that sensation in our own body that something is not okay?
Well, I'm not sure, but my sense is that if there's, are you familiar with mirror neurons?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you're probably picking up on whatever pain is going on with me or whoever it is that's in fear, and it's landing somewhere in you and reminding you, and you're actually stimulating that fear in yourself. Probably be, but in order for me to know for real, or for you to know for real, we'd have to go in, right, and bring our awareness there and have a conversation with that sensation and discover that together. But that would be a starting point. Let me just, it's probably mirror neuron.
Mirror neurons is a good one. It's also interesting for the audience, if you look up what mirror neurons are, they are quite a hot topic. It's a hot topic nowadays.
Yeah. It's like you ever when you're watching a movie and the two stars start to kiss each other and you find your lips going, you know, that's mirror neurons. So, you know, and, you know, they've been doing studies about just witnessing violence can impact you so severely. They're just beginning to realize what the impact is on so much violence on television and all kinds of screens because of mirror neuron, among other things.
Thank you. Thank you, Curtis. Sure. There is a question from Tessa, and she is asking you, what's the best practice to suggest for someone having a panic attack?
Well, there's no easy questions with this group, huh? So again, this is very individual, but most of the time, in my experience with people having panic attacks, it is they have lost connection to ground. And however, speaking hypothetically, which is very dangerous, especially in areas of trauma and panic, if, number one, breathing, bringing the energy down, and also being able to stomp your feet or jump up and down to bring the energy down into the ground, because in panic attacks, if in my experience, the energy is way up here, the breath is really shallow, and there is a huge component of fear. So if you're the one experiencing the panic attacks, you could try that on your own. But if you are a practitioner and someone's experiencing a panic attack, you need to be schooled in how to deal with that. That's a very delicate situation.
Mm-hmm.
But those would be two things, breath and ground.
Thank you.
Hope that's helpful.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's a very rich topic also. Priyanka here is asking for a clarification. She writes, I would like to know more about what makes an emotion so, the story, impulse, and purpose. Another example may help, as I didn't understand it fully.
Okay, sure. So, does she have any particular emotion in mind, or shall I just pick one?
Would you please pick one?
Sure. So I'm not familiar with the webinar format. So let's pick hopelessness, okay? So the story of hopelessness is, I cannot imagine a future better than what I'm experiencing in the present. So I'm hopeless. Now the impulse, when I'm feeling hopeless, is what? Is to withdraw and do nothing. If I'm feeling hopeless, why would I do anything? And the purpose of hopelessness is it allows me to let go of trying to create a better future. Can I come into acceptance with what is? And from acceptance is a wonderful, neutral to positive place from which we can begin to build something different. But as long as we are in hopelessness, we won't be able to find acceptance. So I'll do one more. And maybe between these three. So confusion. Confusion, the emotion of confusion, this does not fit into my understanding. So whatever it is you're saying doesn't relate to me. And the impulse is to try and figure out how this new idea fits into my worldview. It's like, oh no, it's gotta be like this. Or maybe it's like, well, you know what? I can't really find it. And the purpose of confusion is to support us in making sense of things that are not part of my current understanding. If we're able to look at confusion as serving a purpose. If we just look at confusion and go, oh, I'm just confused, and let it go at that, then we're dismissing the emotion as being valid or having a reason to be there. And the reason it's there is, hey, if you're confused, let's work a little harder to see if you can better understand what it is that you're being confused about. And also a simpler version of confusion is unwillingness to choose. I'm confused which way to go. Choose one. Here's another bad joke, Marianne. It's coming. You're used to them now.
Yes.
So Yogi Berra was a manager of the Yankees way back when, and he says, if you come to a fork in the road, pick it up. Okay, sorry about that. Any other questions?
Yeah, I'm just looking at the questions here and I'm thinking which of the heavy questions to choose from. So let's go with, Daniel is asking, when dealing with PTSD, how does one deal with the repeated activation of hypervigilance around others?
Yeah, again, PTSD is a trauma and you need to be trained in trauma. Another person who's really good in trauma is one of Mark Walsh's teacher. Mark Walsh is the person that created this conference, and his teacher, Paul Linden, works with trauma. So if you wanted to get some training there, as well as with Peter Levine, either or, I would highly recommend going there. But at a very minimum, to answer that, is you need to titrate it. You need to start really, 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 really small and see if you can avoid stimulating it into trauma. And if you can, great. And then breathe into that, begin to normalize that. And then the next time, maybe you can make it a little bit bigger. But that's as far as I would want to go. And if you're not practicing this and you don't have training in it, I would highly recommend that you get training or get professional help around that.
Okay, there is a practical here, a question from Tessa. Do you have a chart of all these emotions and descriptions and so on? Because she finds it so interesting.
Yeah, so that's in our book. So this is the book. It has 150 emotions. It has the meaning of it, the impact, related emotions, the orientation, how it might feel in your body. So it's, and then on the School of Emotions website, they have these great little cards. They're Emoli cards, and they have the emotion, and they have the purpose, the impulse, and the story on all of them. And so those are two resources. Also, the Center for Nonviolent Communication has a list of emotions on their website. I think they have 200 or so. They don't have purpose and story and all that kind of stuff. But the thing about it is, it's like, just because we say that's what the purpose is doesn't mean that's what the purpose is. And it doesn't mean that's the story. So you can discover it for yourself. You go, why, what purpose could this emotion possibly serve in my life right now? Why would I be experiencing this? And you can come up with it on your own. And the narrative is right there if you're paying attention to it. So the book is called The Field Guide to Emotions, A Practical Orientation to 150 Essential Emotions. It's available on Amazon. I can share my screen to give you a look at it. It was on the last slide that I had. Actually on the first slide. This guy. That's what it looks like.
We are also posting the title to the chat, so you will be able to.
Oh, great. Thank you.
To look it up. So maybe a last question for the remaining 3 minutes before we wrap it up.
Sure.
Is that good with you?
Sure.
So Ariel asks, how can we regain an emotion if it is blocked by a limiting belief? And she gives an example, for example, trust, when we believe that men will, for example, hurt us.
Yeah, that's a great one. So it's a process, and you need to be gentle with yourself and kind to yourself, and or if it's a client, and take small steps. But the first step in reestablishing trust, in my opinion, is to apologize. So whoever it is that is feeling the betrayal or the mistrust, if they are apologized to and they accept the apology, that's the first move in my experience in rebuilding trust. It's much harder to rebuild trust once it's broken than to earn the trust in the first place, because you're, you know, once burned, twice wary kind of thing. But, and then it's like, start with little promises. Ask them to, you know, call you at 9 o'clock. If they call you at 9 o'clock, your trust builds a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more until, and the other thing about trust is that you want to trust in certain domains. Just because I trust you with my finances doesn't mean I trust you with my children. Doesn't mean I'm going to trust you with my heart. So we can be very naive that, oh, I trust this person with my finances, so of course they're going to take care of my heart or my whatever. And it's like, they're different domains and they're different criteria for trust. So be, you know, there's books and books and books on trust. So that's a huge, huge territory, but start small and build from there.
Curtis, thank you so much. I think that was our last question because we have 5 minutes to go. But maybe could you stay for another hour?
Well, the other thing is, I want to tell the last questioner, trust your body. If your body is saying, don't trust this person, then don't override it. Until you get a green light from your body, till it opens, you know, trust your body. And yes, I'd be happy to stay for a whole nother hour.
You know, for a change, your session didn't make me cry, which is quite something, but somehow listening to you always makes me feel quite tender and full of possibility somehow. And maybe our participants can share how this session was for them. What kind of emotions did you experience? Maybe small learnings?
That'd be great.
Anything?
And while they're doing that, I have one more poem I could read while they're sharing that. Yeah.
Yes, please.
It's called The Body Knew, and mm-hmm. It's by Tim Sybils. Long before there were words, long before there was patience, the body was twiddling its thumbs. Long before this haze of lies, this swirl of stupid things said and done, the body knew. Long before the animals ran from men, before the lands were named, before the clouds rose up and flew, the body knew. The body knew the tongue would come up with something to say, that the ears would listen, that the words would come like ants, and that soon the brain would be infested and the head would grow hard and heavy. The body knew that the body would be forgotten. The body knew the body would be used to take the brain here and there to make money, to make relationships, to assume the countless postures of idiocy, to sign the contracts and treaties, to stock the stores, the homes, the schools, the offices, the streets, the prisons, the battlefields, the body bags. The body knew it would be lost. Under fabrics that soon the belly would hang, the back would be stiff, that the days would pass, the months would pass, the years would pass. The body knew it would be rated X, because the body knew words would be used to deceive, to decorate, to pack the space between bodies until reaching out meant climbing the mountains of things said. The body knew the brain would be a bully, that the face would be a canvas forever painted with words, that love could never be what they said it was, that a word was always a mask. The body knew the body would dream of headlessness the way a breast dreams of bralessness, of blouselessness, of sunlight and weightlessness. The body knew that someday it would have to move to forget to dance, to forget that it knew what it knew, that it knew.
That was quite something. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Hope I didn't run over time.
A tiny little bit, but it was worth it. So very many positive remarks from the participants, but I will have to close the session. So let me say a few last remarks. So we will have Curtis back for his sharing of his top embodiment tip in a few minutes. But before that, just a few announcements. So our next presenter on this channel is going to be Bence Ganti. He's a fellow Hungarian, actually. He will present in an hour's time. And Bence is going to talk about the stages of self-development and embodiment practice. This channel has its own Facebook group that you can join. Marta is posting the links, I think, as I speak. You can also join a coffee meeting on the main portal of the conference, where you can chat with like-minded participants between sessions. If you enjoy this session, you can replay it for free for the next 48 hours. And you might have noticed that on this conference, we have the best embodiment tutors in the world. And you can have lifetime access to all of these transformational, to say the least, transformational sessions for a reduced price until the end of the conference. And by owning the whole library, you can digest each session in your own time. And you can also access tailored learning lists to deepen your understanding of each topic. And you can also have the conference team to make this work widely accessible for those people who really need it right now, for free, and the most popular presentation in multiple languages also. So Curtis, before I end this webinar very unwillingly, please share your top tip to stay embodied.
My top tip to stay embodied. Mm-hmm. Breathe. Deep, long, slow breathing. That's my top tip.
An absolute pleasure to have you. And thank you. Thank you so much for being with us.
You're most welcome. And thank you for taking such good care of me. Marta and Marian, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And thank you for our participants.
Yeah, thank you everybody for being here.
Bye-bye.